I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to A Word with Tom Merritt. I'm Tom Merritt, and this is the show where I get the pleasure and privilege to sit down with some of the smartest, most interesting folks in the world and talk about how we think. These are conversations I've enjoyed having all my life. I grew up having them with my grandpa Carl in his front room, my grandma Roxy in her front room, and they gave me lots of different ways of looking at the world and understanding how different people have different expertises, and it all led me to this moment right now. Welcome into the warm, toasty front room, Craig Porter. You might think that Craig's in New Zealand when he says that. That's the New Zealand greeting, is it not?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
But you are not in New Zealand. You're in Antarctica.
Yes.
How did you end up in Antarctica, Craig?
Well, there's a long story behind that. So I was in the Navy for 12 and a half years on a nuclear submarine out of Groton, Connecticut. And, one of the things I really enjoyed about being in the Navy, not the Navy stuff, the Navy stuff kind of was, terrible. But what I really liked was my job, being a reactor operator, working on equipment, making things, making power, making water, making everything that is needed for people to live underwater. And the thing that really kept me in the Navy for that amount of time was the people I worked with. I met some of the greatest and some of the worst people I've ever met in my entire life. And when you're on a submarine, it's a very small community. I was on the USS Philadelphia. She doesn't exist anymore. She was decommissioned. I was part of the decommissioning crew. And you get to know people very well, especially when you're out on a mission or on a patrol and there's nothing to do. Mm-hmm. So you talk and you get to know people and things like that. And so that kind of planted the seed, I would say. I didn't hear about the United States Antarctic Program until probably about 2010. And so I started researching it and everything like that. I was originally going to get out of the Navy in 2010, but then I was offered a nice shore duty and I made E7. And so I went to my shore duty, was an instructor in Kings Bay, Georgia for 3 years. And it was still in my mind, but I got an offer from Google, and I went and worked at Google for 4 years, and a lot of the same types of people that I described before, a lot of ex-nukes, as they're called in the Navy.
Heard Google compared to a submarine before. That's interesting.
Well, yeah, it's so I was in a data center. Data centers are very mission critical. And so that's kind of a theme in my life, is like mission criticality. So being part of the team that makes things go and makes things work. And so I left Google and moved up to Portland, Oregon. And, I worked at a couple of data centers there, but then one of my friends from when I was in the Navy, he asked me to work for him in middle management at a national testing company, blood tests and things like that. And so for a few years I was in middle management, went from Quest Diagnostics to Shell Recharge. I was working with EV charging for a little while, but it was all in a middle management role. And I discovered that I don't like looking at spreadsheets all day. I really missed hands-on, fixing things, troubleshooting, things like that. And so just a couple months ago in January, actually, I talked to my now wife and was like, hey, you know, I'm really miserable in my jobs. You know, I've been thinking about Antarctica. What do you think of that? And she was like, oh, we had talked about it a little bit, but we discussed it and she was like, if that's something that you've always wanted to do, then you should do it. And so I have to give a shout out to my wife, Summer. She's 100% behind me. She's so supportive of me and I miss her terribly and she misses me terribly, but she's very proud of me and very supportive. So if it wasn't for that, you know, this would be a lot more difficult. Anyway, the job that I have, I work down in the power plant, keeping our diesel generators running and making sure that, McMurdo Station has power. Because everything runs on power down here. So it's that mission criticality again.
There's a theme.
Yeah. It's nice to be doing, and don't get me wrong, everybody on station is vital. You know, everybody is needed down here. But I like being part of the team that makes sure that the station works, you know, that we have power and water and internet and things like that. So, and I'm very satisfied. I'm very happy down here.
Yeah. It sounds like where you thrive is small contained teams that are providing something people rely on. That seems true of the submarine, the data center, and McMurdo.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And it's where I find my satisfaction. I know that a lot of people want to climb the corporate ladder and get out of the hands-on, work and things like that. And that's, I tried that and it didn't work for me. You know, it wasn't for me. Yeah. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, just it wasn't for me.
Yeah, just not your thing. It did seem really fast where you and I were talking in January, right? Where you said, hey, you know, I'm going to apply for this thing. It's in Antarctica. I don't know if I'll get it, but it'll be really cool if I do. And then, you know, here we are, March. You're down there. You've been working there for a few weeks now.
Yeah. I flew down, the middle of February. So, and when we were chatting on email, I had actually already started the qualification process. So, I can talk about that a little bit. You know, there's a very extensive, physical qualification process because the medical situation down here is very limited. Our medical clinic, we have a doctor, we have a physician's assistant and they're very highly trained. Don't get me wrong, but there's only the two of them and we only have like two hospital beds really. And so, they're really there for like critical injury and things like that. So they don't want to have to, like, I'm sure you heard the story about the Russian doctor who removed his own appendix, and things like that. They don't want to be doing things like that. There's a very, very extensive physical qualification process to make sure that there's no problems with your body. The dental exam is very important because they have very limited dental capability. I mean, if they had to pull a tooth, they probably could, but a lot of it is prevention. If they can avoid that even coming down here, then that's what they want to do. I had never gotten a gallbladder ultrasound before. So that was very interesting, to the warm goo on me whatever the scanner thing is called. That was an experience.
It sounds like what a lot of sci-fi novels describe as the sort of things you need to go through to become the person on the mission to Mars, right? Because you're not going as far, but you are removed. How far are you from things that aren't already where you are?
We're about 2,500 miles from Christchurch, New Zealand. That's where that's kind of the jumping off point for McMurdo Station in the South Pole, Christchurch, New Zealand. So that's where we get our extended cold or extreme cold weather gear and all of the stuff like that. Palmer Station, which is on the other side of the continent, they actually leave out of Punta Arenas, Chile. So, but it's interesting that you bring that up because it is kind of like astronaut qualification almost. Sure. And something that's that I found fascinating is that, especially after May, which is when our last flight is, and we're isolated here, like we are farther from help than the astronauts on the International Space Station. Because, you know, we're 2,500 miles from Christchurch, but this, and, you know, the space station, it's like 400 miles up or whatever, but they have a Soyuz capsule and they can be on the ground in less than a day if they need that.
So they could come to you faster than Christchurch could.
Yes, the astronauts could, but then they'd be stuck here too.
Well, yeah, which would probably not be good. But it's interesting to think about. And when you say that the flights stop in May because it's winter in the Southern Hemisphere where you are, is it because of weather, I assume?
It's basically because of weather, yes. So we have two ice runways, Phoenix Airfield and Williams Airfield. And they have, you know, ICAO designations, you know, it's very fascinating, but yeah, really it comes down to weather, especially in the winter. And we're getting close to the austral winter. I think the last sunset is going to be sometime in April. And so after that, it's dark. And so especially because, the New Zealand, the Royal New Zealand Air Force has had a few incidents, with plane crashes and things like that. And so, you know, they just don't want to risk it. And it's totally understandable. And even the, so we have Air Force C-17s that fly down as well. And it's very common for flights to either be canceled completely for weather or to be what they call boomeranged, which is where the flight takes off and then it returns to its origin because of weather concerns or even mechanical concerns, because there's no parts for the aircraft down here. So if something breaks on the plane, they won't be able to fix it until they get back to Christchurch. And so
that happened to you on your way out, right?
Yes. Yeah. My very first flight, it was on a C-17 and we took off and we, after about an hour and a half, we had to boomerang because of a fuel pump issue or something like that, or one of the issues. And, you know, this is my first time down here. And so I was very, you know, I was a little kind of excited, frustrated, like, oh, I just want to get down there and do my job. But then when you think about it, it's safety concerns. And when you put it in that light, it's very, you know, okay, I understand. You know, everybody has.
How long is the flight?
The flight is about 5.5 hours. Well, and it also depends on the aircraft. So if you take a C-17 or one of the New Zealand 757s, it's about 5.5 hours. If you end up taking a LC-130, which is a ski equipped C-130, it takes about 8 to 9 hours. So that's the time.
So I assume that, you stock up before the winter, so that you don't have to rely on flights in, if something were to happen though, I imagine there are millions of contingency plans. Like,
yes.
What is the procedure in the winter? Like, does it take longer or is it just riskier?
It would be extremely risky if they had to get a flight in, and there would be a lot of higher level discussions of risk versus benefit, things like that. Like if it was a critical medevac, then they'd probably get a flight in and things like that. But if it's a minor thing, then they'll see if they can hold them over and things like that. So it's definitely
have the doc pull the tooth. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's a lot of risk calculations involved, and that's way above my pay grade. So,
So that takes it, but that takes us back to why you need to have that physical evaluation that tries to reduce the risk that anything is going to happen during those months, as close to zero as you can get. Obviously, you can't predict the future perfectly. Sure. What about the non-physical stuff? How do you, what's the personality type that you need to be, and what kind of screening did you go through to get there for that?
Yeah. So the personality type, I've noticed that there's a particular type of person down here, and of course that's a generalization, but it's a person who is, who wants to do a great job at their job, but has kind of been frustrated or stymied by corporate structure or by, the way the government works or things like that. So, again, these are some of the coolest people that I've ever met, all wide range of backgrounds. There's people from Alaska who were, who did trail guiding and things like that to, ex-Navy, a lot of ex-military down here to, to electricians who wanted to try something different, or were tired of whatever was going on back home. So there, it's a microcosm of America down here. It really is, but a microcosm of the best of America, I think, because I haven't met a jerk yet. Everybody's super cool, very friendly, things like that. In regards to, kind of psychological side. So there's not really any psychological testing to come to McMurdo. I believe there is if you're going to winter over at the South Pole, but I'm not really sure. But, in some ways, it's like a normal job in that, I applied and then before, as I was doing the physical qualification process, I was also being interviewed like in a normal job. So, the supervisor in Denver, I think my interview was scheduled to be 30 minutes with him, and we ended up having a 2-hour conversation just about, life and how, approaches to work and things like that. So, I guess that's kind of a vetting process as well.
Sure.
Cause they have a feel of the type of person that will be successful down here and will be able to complete their contract.
I would imagine too, that just knowing how far away you are from immediate intervention, kind of is in everybody's mind. And, like that phenomena of people who live, out in the wilderness or in, hurricane country, you tend to rely on your neighbors a little more and get along with your neighbors a little more. Imagine that's sort of a natural thing in everybody's mind as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I can give a concrete example of that. So the very first time I was doing an oil change on one of the generators, the oil cap has a little, fitting on it that aligns it correctly. And I didn't do that. And so when I torqued the cap down, I broke the thing, and we have, we have one welder on site and she's up at our vehicle maintenance facility. And she was like, yeah, just bring it by, I'll weld it up. I'll fix it for you. And she did. She did a great job. So, and you kind of have that everywhere where people step in to help. People will, give advice or, if volunteers are needed for something, like for example, last night, so Thursday nights are, and I know it's Thursday back home, but it's Friday here. So hello from the future to everybody. But so Scott Base, which is the Kiwi base, is only a couple miles up the road. And Thursday nights are American nights where we kind of have an open invitation to go over there and go to their store and hang out in their bar and things like that.
And, fun.
Most people take the van over. There's a shuttle van. And people volunteer to drive the van, hey, I'm not doing anything tonight. I'll drive the van over, So, little things like that, where you might not notice it, but it really helps out a lot.
Yeah, you need a designated driver in Antarctica, just like anywhere else. That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. Yeah, and there's a process where especially in the winter, each of the vehicles has a radio, and you check out with the central communications, and they keep track of where everybody is and things like that. So it's a DD in Antarctica.
What's the bar like?
So at Scott Base, they still serve alcohol at their bar. They have a pool table. I mean, it's not huge, but it's a nice cozy space for people to unwind and get to know each other, because we spend so much time in our work centers. The only time you might see somebody is at lunch or at dinner or something like that. And so it's a nice time for people to kind of get together and socialize and get to know each other. The two bars that we have at McMurdo, they don't serve alcohol. But people can still, go and socialize and things like that. We have a station store where you can buy alcohol. You have 3 points a week, and then a six pack of beer is like 1 point, and then a bottle of, unspecified, spiced rum might be 3 points or something like that. So, they try to control that so people don't get too rowdy, and a lot of it is for safety reasons, because if somebody gets too drunk and falls down and breaks their leg, then now you're into that unforeseen medical circumstance that we were talking about.
Did you see For All Mankind, the most recent season?
I did not. I don't have Apple TV, so I've not seen that.
They have a bar on Mars. This one, of course, because it's a drama, is also, the place where the black market stuff happens too. But the size and the description that you're talking about seems similar of like, it's cozy, right? It reminded me of that.
Yeah. I don't know if there's any black market dealings going on or anything like that, but not that I am aware of. So
I would assume not. Yeah.
That analogy is very fitting, because we were talking a little bit before about how when I first wanted to come down here, I thought it would be like The Martian. I thought it would be like a Spartan.
Yeah.
Base. And I had done some research and things like that, but then you get down here and you realize it's more like Aero Station on the Expanse. It's a community. Even though, it's work and your social life are incredibly intertwined, where it's virtually impossible to separate them. So you kind of work where you live. And that's why I kind of look at it as like, a futuristic, outpost or space station or something like that.
Is there an Antarctic patois like the Belters have in the Expanse?
Does that mean like language or something like that?
Yeah. Like, well, the Belters in the Expanse obviously have an entirely different language. It's like a melange of various languages.
Yeah, like a Creole or something like that.
Yeah.
So there's that article that's out there about the British scientists who found that, in Antarctica, they had a different accent and things like that. And I don't know that that would be as possible, because we have a lot of movies and TV shows. And even if we couldn't stream, there's like thousands of DVDs and things like that. So I don't know if an accent per se would develop, but there's definitely words that we use that wouldn't make sense anywhere else. So there's this word called skua, S-K-U-A. And what a skua is, it's a bird. It's called the South Polar skua. And they are infamous for like stealing trash and just stealing things and putting them places and things like that. And so to skua something here is to find something in the trash that's useful. So for example, we have a whole SCUA building where things that people don't want anymore, so like old sweaters or old pants and things like that, you know, they don't necessarily want to take all that stuff home with them. So instead of throwing it away and contributing to, you know, waste and stuff like that, they put it in SCUA. So if somebody else wants it, then they can take it for themselves. You know, I found some, I found a few pairs of pants in SCUA it's basically a word for someone's trash is another person's treasure.
Almost. Yeah. Upcycling or reused. Yeah,
exactly. So that's what we call SCUA here.
And SCUA is the name of a bird as well.
Yes, correct. Because the SCUA does that. You know, it'll find trash and then make a nest out of it and things like that. Yeah. So that's the biggest one that comes off the top of my head. So there's definitely terms that we use down here that, you know, wouldn't make sense back home.
So we're talking to each other. You're in Antarctica. That blows my mind that we can even do this. That, of course, means there's internet in Antarctica. Yes. How does that work? And I don't necessarily mean for you to, you know, tell me the infrastructure layout of it, but like, how well does it work? It seems like it's working pretty well.
It's pretty well. So right now we're talking over Starlink. And Starlink is pretty new to USAP. I think it's only been a couple of years where this capability has been around. So I got my Bluetooth headphones going to my phone, which is hooked up to the Wi-Fi in the building, which has the Starlink, which is connected to the Starlink, you know, infrastructure, and then it's going to outer space. So there's that. Before that, there is some slower internet, and I'm not really sure how it works. I think it's also satellite, but it's more like military related or using like the government satellites and things like that. Pretty much everything is either satellite or like HF radio. Because there's no subsea cables or anything like that, at least to McMurdo Station. There's been discussion of doing it, but, you know, those plans come and go and, you know, based on infrastructure cost and things like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know if that's in the cards anymore with the satellite capability that we have with Starlink. I mean, it's, you know, people download movies and things like that. I can have a chat with you, you know, from 10,000 miles away, you know? So, it's really good. I mean, there's no latency, you know, like it's incredible.
Yeah. How long Starlink service has been used at McMurdo?
About a year and a half to 2 years.
It's
pretty new. Yeah.
Do the people who've been there longer than that rave about the fact or talk about, before we got Starlink?
There are, you know, there are some of the old timers who are like, well, back in my day, we didn't have internet, you know, and things like that. But then they're on social media and things like that. So it's like, well, you don't miss the old days that much. So, yeah, it's there's definitely the, you know, back in the day. There are people who have been coming, like one of our linemen, I think he's been down here 17 times, like 17 years and super solid guy. Like he's great, but he definitely has some stories of like, well, you know, back in the day, you know, this, you know, we did things this way and everything like that. So, but it's, you know, it's fascinating the blend of, you know, the old and the new here. Because we have Starlink.
Are you able to like stream video or is it just all downloads?
Yeah, I can stream. Like sometimes in the evenings, I'll stream Twitch, you know, different, you know, like I was watching the most recent sumo tournament on Twitch.
Wow.
You know, I have a passing interest in sumo. I mean, I'm not an expert or anything, but you can stream video, especially now because the station population is so low. the internet is a lot better. In the summertime, when there's, you know, almost, you know, 600, 700, 800 people here, I'm told that that's not possible.
Okay.
So yeah, there's a lot of bandwidth constraints in the summertime that we don't have in the winter because there's just less people.
Interesting. Yeah. But it does seem like it's pretty capable. It's obviously working pretty well for us, in a way that, you know, 5 years ago I wasn't able to do. Like you are the second person that I have interviewed for a podcast who has been in Antarctica. The other one I had to wait for them to come back to talk to them. So
yeah,
this is pretty amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's incredible. And even, you know, my second week here, I did, you know, Facebook video chat with my wife in near San Diego and my family near St. Louis. So we were all on there and they were all blown away. They were like, wow, I can't believe I'm talking to you. And I was like, hey, you know, I was able to take my phone and like take the camera and point it out the window and like, hey, look at where I am. And my nieces were astonished. They were like, oh my God.
With the limited bandwidth, is there sort of a practice of courtesy to, you know, not use it for too long, or?
Not that I've seen.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe during the summertime, but not that I've seen in my travels, I guess, around the station.
Sure. Yeah. So far, not, you haven't run into it, which means it's pretty good, right? Or otherwise people would start bringing it up. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's also, you know, like the Starlink is not in work centers. So like down at the power plant, you know, at different, you know, mission critical facilities and things like that, there's no Starlink. There's only the official Wi-Fi for like official use and things like that. So
Starlink is mostly for personal use then?
Mostly for personal use. Yeah. Okay. So like in the dorms, in the galley, you know, like when I walk up from the power, because the power plant's down by the water. So I have to walk up the hill to go to the galley for lunch and for dinner. And when I do that, as soon as I walk in, I start, you know, my phone starts buzzing. In my watch, you know, I'm still getting notifications. So, so it's like, oh, people are interested in me.
you wonder when you're down at the power plant and then you get back and it restores your faith.
Yeah. Yeah. Did they forget about me? No, they didn't. But but sometimes it's nice to not get a ton of notifications too. Cause
sure.
You know, I'll check, you know, I can check my Gmail on my computer, on my phone. And
that's amazing.
You know, it's interesting how, like, I'll get emails and I'm like, you know what? I don't care about this, you know, like lots of, you know, junk emails and things. And I'm like, I don't care. I don't care about that. Just delete it. So
little perspective setting. Yeah.
Yeah.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Now you said that there's also, you told me before, there's a pager network.
There is a pager network. Yes.
Too, which is interesting.
Yeah. It's, and I don't know the details about it. All I know is people who are mission critical. So like power plant, water plant, you know, operational people, things like that. You know, the firefighters and the medical people and things like that. We have pagers. And so, you know, I can either email my pager or somebody can email me, or there's like mass messages that get sent out. Like if there's a power outage or if the weather is going to be really bad, you know, you'll get a page and it'll tell you, oh, it's it's condition 2 right now. There's the weather has different conditions based on wind speed and temperature and visibility and things like that. So yeah, that was something I did not expect at all. It was like, hey, you can get paged. So,
and I assume that the mission critical internet Wi-Fi pager stuff that is campus wide versus the Starlink, where I'm guessing the receiver is just in the galley area.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So anywhere that I go on station, even, you know, like I said, Scott Base is a couple miles away, but they're tied in with us. So like we supply a lot of their power, and their comm systems and their phones. So we have phones and things like that. So mm-hmm. we're tied in, they're tied into our network. So like last night, if I was at Scott Base and something bad had happened, I would have gotten the page and then I'd have to catch the van back. So
you're in the network. Yeah.
In the network.
Yeah. Again, it's just wild to think, right? That you're in Antarctica, you could be out, having fun and get paged to come back to work, you know, something just like anywhere else. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so, especially because I'm the lead power plant mechanic. So I'm kind of in charge of everything that happens in regards to the generators. So it's like, I can't have too much fun. Like, yeah, so I can have a little bit of fun, but I can't have
to. gotta keep it under constraint.
Yeah. Exactly.
But speaking of fun, you said there's a radio station or two there as well.
Yes, there's a radio station. So, there's over in building 155, which is like the main kind of, that's where the galley and there's some dorms and a lot of the other stuff, but the, Armed Forces Radio and Television Service, they have a radio station there. 104.5 ICE Radio is one of the radio stations, and you can sign up to be a volunteer DJ. And they have like this whole computerized, there's a vinyl room, which is incredible. Like, Robin Williams in Good Morning Vietnam, like how he had all those records. We have one of those, like one of those sets of records. And it's one of only like four or five that still exist in the world because they had to be like, because of licensing and everything like that. When they went from the vinyl records to like CDs and things, then everywhere else, those records had to be destroyed. So like people would use them for target practice and things like that. But because of how remote we are and how wasteful that would be, we're one of the last locations to have that full vinyl room. And it's fascinating. Like the logbook has like Anthony Bourdain's name in it because he came down here several years ago and shot a, I have to watch it. I've never seen it, but like he's in there, like all of the, you know, all of these VIPs and dignitaries and things, like they've all signed in that logbook and it's incredible. So you have the vinyl room, you have all these CDs with all the music, and then most of the stuff is on the computer already, so you just like search and then drag and drop. And so I was a volunteer DJ Tuesday nights, DJ Fission, that's me.
That's great.
And
how does it feel?
It feels weird. I never thought that I would do that kind of thing, but I did. My show was called Flip Phone Flashback. So, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, pop and things like that. A lot of girl power, a lot of boy bands, you know, things like that. So it was like my early days in the Navy, to be honest. I was having a good time.
Do you get requests?
No, I haven't taken any requests yet. I have my playlist and I knew what I wanted to play. Mm-hmm. And so as I get more comfortable with it, then, you know, I'll start taking requests and, you know, things like that. So,
would the request come by email or phone, do you think?
They would come by phone. Yeah. People can,
people can call all around the station.
Yep.
Yeah,
they
call
in and the phone is tied into the board. So you can, you know, have on air callers and
on the air.
Yep. Exactly. I mean, some people have talk shows, you know, they have radio talk shows.
Yeah.
So, and it goes into, you know, we talked about like the tech and, you know, movies, like, to be honest, there's not a lot to do down here. And so recreational, you know, there's a rec committee and they put things together, and, you know, you have the radio station and you have all these things that, again, people from the community volunteer to do. You know, like on Sundays, I volunteer at the library. You know, we have a pretty extensive library here, and I open it up and check books out to people and check books in and help people find things. So, and I would never do that back home, you know, or I never would have thought of it. You know, back home, I would have never thought I would want to try being a DJ, but I'm like, oh, why not? Yeah. You know, what's the worst that's going to happen? You know, 150 people or 200 people don't like my radio show.
Yeah. Oh. I assume no one else can get that radio station except the people within the sound of the transmitter, right? Like
Pretty much, that's
the only way to get it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a standard 50 kilowatt transmitter up on the hill, you know, so pretty much this area. And then they also have it on we have like a closed circuit cable system. So all the TVs, you know, the TVs have like Weather Channel and recreation, like what's going on, and then movie channels, you know, so AFN and things like that. And
So
pretty much like nobody else is ever going to hear it other than people down here. So
you know who your audience is. Like you literally know. Yeah.
Yeah. I know. And then if they don't like it, then I will hear about it the next day. That's
for
sure.
You get good feedback, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah, any feedback is good feedback. So,
yeah, are people mostly military or ex-military? Like, what is the organizational system in that way?
So I think a lot of it depends on what department you're in. So a lot of the, and I you know, that's tough to say because, you know, a lot of the people that I know are ex-military down here, but then you have a lot of people who work in the, like work in the galley, for example, but have master's degrees. Like, we have a couple, two or three of the research assistants over at the Crary Lab, which is like where the actual science happens. They're working on their PhDs right now, you know? So it's like I said, it's like, a microcosm of America. So, you know, there is quite a bit of ex-military, but then there's also people who never served in the military, who never wanted to be in the military, don't like the military, things like that. So it's a wide variety of people.
I think, you know, you mentioned the Armed Forces Radio, Armed Forces Network, and all of that. Like there's a military organization to it, but it's not a military operation. Is that
correct? Yes. And And because everything that we do down here is kind of governed by the Antarctic Treaty system. And if you read the original Antarctic Treaty, it says that there can be no military bases on Antarctica, but military support is allowed. So McMurdo Station started out as a Navy facility. And so, I think it was in 1995 when the military transitioned control to, you know, to the NSF. And so there's a lot of holdovers from the old Navy. Like, you know, like I said, the cafeteria is called the galley because that's what you call it in the Navy.
Right.
You know, things like that. So yes, there is a lot of military, support. Not everything, of course, but yeah, a lot of it, you know, military support are you know, the aircraft that fly in are Air Force C-17s, you know, because they're really some of the only aircraft that can land in these conditions, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, no military activity, but military support.
So you're headed into the long cold winter. How long are you going to be there? What's the term of your employment?
Yeah, so my contract it's supposed to end in October. Some of that will depend on if the flights get delayed or not.
Sure.
Because you know that you can't control the weather, and so that's when I'm supposed to redeploy out of Antarctica.
Do you, I expect your wife will probably want you to do that. Like, but have you guys talked about the idea of like, would you repeat it or go back, or is it sort of like, this is the experience and then you just take that with you?
So we haven't spoken about it in detail. I kind of wanted to see how my first stint down here went. You know, if I absolutely hated it, then I wouldn't want to come back, you know? And I still have I've only been down here like 7 weeks. So, you know, it's been pretty good so far. We'll see how it goes in the middle of, you know, July and August when it's been pitch black outside for all day for several weeks. So I don't know, you know, and that's the honest truth. Would I like to come back? You know, I think it would be cool, but I also think that it would be cool to try to go to the South Pole. The job that I originally applied for was at the South Pole, but I didn't get that one. But then they offered this position to me, so I was like, okay, I'll take that. And we have talked about it a little bit. You know, of course, the decision is not just mine. It also depends on Summer, my wife, and our cats. You know, how will they remember me when I get back? Will they care? You know,
so. They're cats. Who knows?
Yeah, nobody knows.
It's always hard to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I assume there's no question of people bringing family members, like wives, children, anything like that, right?
So not as like tourists or not as just like, you know, people to be here. There are married couples down here. There are people who, you know, when I was walking back to my room, you know, I passed a couple of them in the hallway. There are, you know, people do form relationships down here, you know, and you know, people have gotten married and, you know, for example, our lead, wastewater operator in the summer, she and her husband come back every year. And so they request the same room every year and they have it set up just the way they like it. And then when they leave, they give custody of it to somebody that they trust to keep it in the same configuration and everything like that. So,
but they both have jobs. They're both working,
jobs.
Right?
Yes. Yeah. So they both have jobs and things like that. So yeah, there's not, you know, you can't just come down here as a tourist.
You can't just bring the wife unless the wife gets a job or husband.
Unless she gets a job I would love for her to come down here because, you know, some of like watching the sunset behind, you know, the Royal Society Range, it's one of the most breathtaking things that I've ever seen. And I don't use that word very often, breathtaking or amazing or astonishing. Uh-huh. Like I'm not prone to superlatives, normally. So when I say that, like, I mean it, like, and she does art, you know, so I would love for her to, you know, to experience it. I don't know if it'll happen because we have five cats and, you know, they would miss us, you know, miss both of us and things like
that. Yeah, they're definitely not going to let you bring the cats. The cats are not going to get jobs. So
absolutely not.
Well, I could talk to you forever, but I know you're on your lunch break and I appreciate you making time to chat with us. So we should probably get to the word game that finishes this up. Are you ready to play this or that?
I am ready to play this or that. I never thought that I would be playing this or that. And there have been times when I listen to other people playing this or that, and I'm like, why would you pick that? So I'm sure that... I'm sure that people will think that about me as well.
Yeah. And you probably know some of the repeat categories that are coming too. So you're well prepared. I'm glad to hear that. I'm going to start with one that's not, this is just silly. It's not really practical, especially because you haven't been to either of these, I don't think. North or South Pole?
I would say North Pole because you can actually get to it fairly. Wait, no, South. Yeah, I said South Pole. Right?
You said north.
No, you mean not North Pole, South Pole, because you can get to it.
Okay.
Yeah, we have a station there, and the neutrino detector and everything like that is down there. Up at the North Pole, you know, for people who don't know, you know, the North Pole is under the Arctic Ocean, and so you can't really get to it very easily. unless you're on a submarine. I know that recently, just last week, there were a couple of U.S. submarines that surfaced near through the ice near the south, near the North Pole. And so I got to see that on Facebook. One of my friends from when I was on the ship, he's the chief of the boat on one of those ships. I can't remember which one, but so I got to see his pictures and everything. So, but I want to go to the South Pole. So that's what I'll
do. Yeah. I'd like to start a good-natured beef between the North and the South Pole, but it'd be very unbalanced since there's no people at the North Pole. So
yeah. Well, win by default. So
yeah. Hockey or skiing?
Hockey, definitely. You know, as you know, big St. Louis Blues fan. I'm pretty annoyed at the game with Vegas last night and everything that happened. My wife was livid with everything that happened. I don't know how to ski, so I can't pick skiing. And it's been years since I snowboarded, so I have to go with hockey. And those guys are just incredible. Like, you know, they the stuff that they do, and then they're still so humble and you know, community focused and things like that. Like, I think most hockey players are great human beings.
Yeah. One of these days we're going to see a Blues game together, you and me.
Absolutely.
You'll have to be back from Antarctica, of course.
Yes.
Unless they do an NHL game in Antarctica someday, who knows?
I mean, the bay is freezing over, you know, so maybe they could do a winter classic down here.
Yeah, exactly. What better place to do a winter classic?
Yeah.
Fast or slow zombies?
Slow zombies, because in my mind, that's what a zombie is. When I first, you know, heard about fast zombies and things like that, I'm like, that doesn't make sense. You know, in my mind, a zombie is slow. Not for any reason, like you could get away from them faster or things like that. It's just in my mind, a zombie is slow.
That's it. You have created the category of zombie as slow. And yeah. And that's how they started. That was in the movies anyway, that's how they started.
Yeah. Yeah.
Savory or dessert crepes?
I'm going to say dessert crepes, because I had never heard of a savory crepe until I started listening to A Word with Tom Merritt.
See, you could tell we're both from near St. Louis, because I was like, no one's going to pick savory crepes, and everyone picks savory crepes. It's crazy. Yeah.
And I had never heard of them. So, you know, no hate towards them or anything like that. I just, again, in my mind, a crepe is...
Yeah, it's like zombies.
Yeah, exactly. Zombie crepe.
Yeah. Motorcycle or motorbike?
I say motorcycle. I know, and you know, most Americans say motorcycle, but I like motorbike because it just sounds more, it sounds more, like worldly, I guess. Because most of the rest of the world says, motorbike, you know, like, ooh, you've been places because you say motorbike.
Sophisticated.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I totally get what you're saying. Yeah. I think you've already kind of given away your answer, but dogs or cats?
Oh, cats. I mean, I grew up, I shouldn't be so enthusiastic because I grew up with dogs. I love dogs. I love all pets. You know, it's just... I like cats because they're more self-contained. You know, dogs are they're a lot of work, and especially because, you know, in relation to the last question, I ride a motorcycle. And so when I was single, you know, I took a lot of motorcycle trips and things like that, or motorbike trips. You know, I had a cat at the time, and, you know, I could give her a bunch of food, and I knew that she would be okay. Whereas if I had a dog, I'd have to find somebody to keep an eye on the dog and all of that rigmarole. So, I'm more cats.
We get a lot of people who are like, I like all pets, but if I have to pick kind of situation. So I think that's understandable. Let's go to different animals then. Pigeon or skua?
Oh man, that's a tough one. I would say a skua, because skuas are like, they're still independent. They're still wild. you know, whereas a lot of pigeons, you see them and they're very dependent on human activity and civilization and things like that. And it's not their fault. I mean, it's not like they have any agency to change that, you know. Sure. But I like the idea of, you know, the independence and you know, kind of making do. Like I said, you know, they find trash and make a nest out of it and things like that. So so I'd say
they're the cats of the bird world in a way.
Yes. Yes.
And of course, the final question, and a pertinent question for someone in Antarctica: hot or cold?
You know, I prefer cold, because so when you're cold, you know, you can put on more layers and things like that. when it's too hot, there's only a certain amount of clothes you can take off before, you know, people start complaining. or you get, you know, the cops called on you or something like that. Like, it's very hard to cool down. So yeah, I prefer cold. And even with my motorcycle, I have like heated gear, like a heated jacket and heated chaps and things like that. But riding when it's very hot is not pleasant.
This all makes sense. I've heard it from cold loving people my whole life, but I still prefer the hot. There's a limit to what you can wear to keep warm. At a certain point, it just doesn't help anymore. So
absolutely,
it's my only comeback. But
and it's even more, you know, the thing about it, and I'm like my mom in this way. Like, so I'm from Hawaii, so you would think I would like the warm, and I do to a certain extent. But you know, you know, I don't like getting all sweaty. That's the thing.
Well, thank you so much for talking with me, man. Like, this has been incredible. We never actually said the word. I think it should be obvious, but for anyone who didn't get it, the word for today's episode was Antarctica. And Craig, thank you for giving us insight in what it's like to actually live there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if I can put a little plug out there, I do have, you know, Instagram and stuff like that. If you go to my webpage, it's djfission.com. I've had that handle for a long time. I just decided to make it my DJ name while I'm down here, but, it's all one word, and that goes to my Instagram and I don't really use, X too much, but, you know, if you want to reach out there or whatever, that's available as well. So
yeah, excellent. Go check it out. Fission has two S's in it. djfission.com. Thanks again, Craig.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Tom. It's been great talking to you.
Thanks again to Craig for talking to us. And a note, all of his opinions expressed by him are his. They do not represent any other organization. Thanks to our producer, Anthony Lemos. Thank you for listening to this show and telling your friends about it. You can get an ad-free version of this show with Acast Plus. Click on Access Exclusive Content at awordpodcast.com, and we'll have a word with you next time.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.